Steve, agus fáilte arás to the Crazy House Prices podcast with me, Kieran Mulqueen. Today we are talking all about finances. I have Niall O'Connor on from Financial Planning Matters. He is a certified financial planner, and although he's a sponsor of the Instagram page and of the podcast, he is so, so wise and so, so generous with his time. So trust me when I say, even if he wasn't sponsoring everything I do, his insights are just too valuable to miss, and I'd still have him on here. He's really honest. He's an absolute expert, and he's always willing to help. And he's been really, really helpful to me and to any of my followers that have used him. So he's just one of life's really good guys. So I wanted to get him on to try and just explain finances, investing, saving, pensions, all of the things that are often kind of swept under the rug. I think in Ireland, we don't really love talking about our finances or our personal finances anyway. So the first half of this conversation, we're going to talk about the basics of savings and investments for those who find the concept a little bit intimidating, and hopefully we make it a little bit more understandable for you. We cut through a bit of the jargon, and I'm hoping that it makes it more digestible for you, for if you're listening. And then in the second half of the podcast, we're going to demystify pensions, which I am big on pensions at the moment. As I get into my mid to late 30s, they are essential yet often kind of misunderstood element of retirement planning. And I know it's really hard to think about retirement when you're in your 30s or your 20s, but you really do need to, because things aren't getting any easier and things aren't getting any cheaper, and you need to have a big lump sum there for when you retire so that you're actually able to live your life. So I think working your whole life and then getting to retirement and then having nothing. So with Niall's guidance, we explore how you can take on the reins of your own financial future, even with all the skyrocketing prices of everything, houses, energy bills, everything like that. So if you do have any amount of money at the end of each month, he'll tell you what to do with it. So it's more than just kind of numbers and figures. I want this podcast to help inspire you to build your own kind of solid financial foundation. So whether you're looking to dip your toes into a little bit of investing or seeking ways to secure a comfortable nest egg for when you get older like me, this episode is for you. So stay tuned, have a listen, and I'll get on with the podcast now. Hi, I am just going to pause the podcast for a second to talk to you about some sponsors of the Crazy House Prices podcast. This episode is sponsored by Daft.ie. Daft is Ireland's number one property portal. Daft has the most properties available for sale and rent, and is the preferred national property website amongst consumers in Ireland. So Daft.ie's core vision is to make buying, selling and renting property better for everyone in Ireland. So Daft's mission is to simplify each step of every property transaction in the Irish market to make buying, selling and renting in Ireland simple. That's why Daft.ie build innovative tools like Offers by Daft, an online real-time offers platform that provides never-before-seen transparency for the Irish consumer when buying a home. Are you looking to buy? Maximise your chances of finding your dream home by visiting Daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. Now, I have Niall O'Connor with me here from Financial Planning Matters. Niall is a certified financial planner, not a qualified financial whatever. I'll let you explain it, Niall. Can you explain the difference between what you are and then maybe what most people would hear of in terms of a qualified financial advisor?
Absolutely. Listen, Kieran, thanks. First of all, thanks a million for having me on. I suppose the best way to start is just to explain the journey, I suppose, I've been on or someone in the industry be on to get to sort of the qualification you have. So ultimately, when you join the industry and insurance industry or the financial planning sort of arena, is you would start off by doing 6 exams, and the 6 exams would qualify you to be what's called a qualified financial advisor or a QFA. So ultimately, that is probably the minimum requirement in any organization, bank, brokerage, wherever you work for, it's a life company, to be able to advise clients at different stages of life. But ultimately, a QFA person then would go on after a number of years experience, and if they want to enhance their sort of value to the end user, the client, or their book of people they look after, would be what's called a CFP. So CFP stands for Certified Financial Planner. So Certified Financial Planner would be someone who's probably in the industry more than 5-6 years, has a vast array of experience of advising people at different stages of life, and ultimately wants to enhance the value they can bring to their clients. So the best way to describe it would be that you're able to bring people on a journey, and ultimately that journey leads to advice, that advice leads to a financial solution or a product. A QFA person would be very much geared towards understanding a need and selling a product. So when you're building a house, for example, you probably see on our website, is I built this sort of infographic to show people what a QFA person would would do at the basis, which would be a foundation, and then ultimately a CFP person will bring in additional ancillary considerations. And one or two of them would be inheritance tax planning down the road when you build a sustainable plan, or things like, you know, having a multifaceted approach to retirement. It's not just savings, it's not inheritance, it's bringing all them together to understand what you should be considering at different stages of your life. So that's what a CFP person would do. They would bring together all your sort of goals and needs, map them out, or maybe on a sort of a cash flow based model, and ultimately give you a Google map approach to what your future would look like based on decisions you make today. So I suppose I've been on both sides of the fence. I've been in Irish Life for a long period of time, fantastic training, got my QFA, and ultimately moved on to doing CFP and a master's. And as a result, I suppose the business for me is about adding value to people at different stages. I suppose at that point in time, I felt it was a need, was to move on and build a sustainable business where I can offer people different solutions at different stages of life and not tied to one insurer, one insurance company. And as a result of that, then I moved on to do a master's through UCD in relation to financial services. So again, people will sort of buy into what we do, the experience they have, and ultimately, more importantly, is being able to help them at different stages or junctures of their life. Okay. That's in a nutshell what it is. But ultimately, people have vast different experiences. So example, when another industry would be, if you go to a solicitor, your solicitor will have people who are paralegals. They'll have people in within their sort of they'll have a principal, and you'll have people who will advise you at different stages or different experiences, but ultimately being able to do it what you need at your point in time of your life.
Okay, so you're basically at the top of your game. You're highly qualified, highly experienced. I think money is one of these things where, I don't know whether it's an Irish thing, we don't really like to talk about money that much. We like to complain about how much things cost, but we don't like to talk about how much we earn or what we do with our money or our finances. And I just think it's really important that people are informed and educated about their money. So that's why I'm talking to you. So in terms of, let's start from the basics. Whenever I put a question box up about finances, I get loads of questions in for you. And obviously I can't say anything about finances because it's a very heavily regulated industry, which is great. I wish more industries were like that because it cuts out a lot of the messing. But let's say an introduction to investments, right? So for someone who has never invested before, can you explain in the simplest terms what investing is and why it might be beneficial for a person's financial future?
Absolutely. So the first part would be sort of, instead of moving to investments, about what saving. So people confuse what saving and investing is, and they sort of pair them together. So saving is having money available to you at any point in time and yielding very little. Investing is looking at the opportunity to try and grow your money over a certain period of time or a time frame. So the one question I always ask people when we do discovery calls, so like you said there about DMs, we get hundreds of DMs about investing and people saying, I don't want to lose all my money, because the fear of loss and loss aversion is a big thing for people. I suppose human psyche is, they've heard the Barstool talk about someone losing a fortune investing in certain funds and different things over time. So I suppose the reason we do discovery calls about investing is because a lot of people, and again, back to what you said there, we don't get any education through the educational system in Ireland about the importance of financial planning, and investing is a facet of financial planning. So ultimately, I always lead with the question is, do you want capital preservation or do you want capital growth as part of your plan? So capital preservation would be holding on to what you have. So if you've got €1,000 and you want to hold on to that €1,000 and you don't want to invest it, you would put it in a conventional bank account, credit union, Unpost or something like that. If you want to have the opportunity for your fund to grow or even keep up with inflation. So inflation has never been on the radar probably. I'm in the industry 20 years this year. Inflation hasn't been on the radar probably 15 of my 20 years here. So it's something that is a real risk to people that they need to understand. If you have something like 6% inflationary rate at the moment, which was north of nearly 9-10% only 6 months ago, is the real purchasing power of your money that you don't see is a big problem if you don't invest money. So again, it's tying in the risk profile or the person's appetite to risk reward, the time frame that they're looking to invest it, and more importantly, why are they looking to invest it? Do they need to invest it? So if someone comes to us at 75, 80 years of age, they don't need to invest the money. They need to enjoy them. They just need to make sure the money's in a safe place. For someone who is starting off at 20, 25 years of age, first job, maybe living at home and looking to create maybe a good future for themselves, they might have different time frames in their own head. I want to move out. I want to buy a house in 10 years' time. I want to get 50,000 saved in 10 years. So then we work and we build a plan around their need and their aspiration in relation to appetite for return. So back to, I suppose, what you asked me was, investing is trying to grow your money in a way that's going to give you a positive return over a certain period of time. And again, the time frame is really, really important, because unfortunately, people think that you can make money quickly through loads of different schemes or loads of different things to see on YouTube. And I suppose my job sometimes is educating people to make informed decisions based on their needs and based on their time frames. And unfortunately, people get sort of caught up in the whole, this fund did 10% in the last year. Yeah. And stuff like that. So I try and take a step back and say, like, you need to understand that markets, when you invest in a particular fund, it will be a basket of assets or asset classes. So there's four asset classes in the world. There's cash, which yields you close to nothing. But at the last, obviously, 6 months, we're starting to see the banks passing on interest rate increases. So now you can get a decent return, still lower than what inflation is, but you can get some level. Then you have, you know, you have things like bonds where you're on post solidarity bond or your corporate bond or your government bond. Then you have things like, yeah, so then you have property. So you have things like, you've spoken about property. So real estate investment trusts, which are, you know, a big problem in Ireland at the moment, because what's happening is they're obviously, they're locking out a lot of people in relation to being able to buy, because they're buying units and blocks of apartments and houses in the States. Then you have, you know, your conventional commercial property funds, which I don't know if you saw today, is Aviva have put a 6 month moratorium on them because they're liquid. So there are things that will be part of the fund. And then you have equities, which is your Amazon, your Metas, your Apples, and all those stocks that are diversified across sectors, across countries, across cultures, across currencies, but ultimately a basket of those things to give you a return relative to the risk profile that we would go through and educate people before they make a decision. Because it's really important to say, is it's a big sort of onus on us to be able to make sure before someone decides to invest that they know, one, the opportunity, and two, the risks, and understand the time frame, because markets go up and down, and it's important to say, when you stay in the game for the period that you've agreed to stay in, you will get rewards, but there will be ups and downs in between. And it's my job, like a football coach, is to say, listen, you need to understand when markets go up and down that you contact us or reach out to me if you're concerned, and I'm able to kind of take a step back and say, listen, why did you go in at the first place? Or where are we now? And it's a time frame, or has anything changed since then? If nothing has changed, well, then the plan hasn't changed and we stay the course. So I suppose for the last 20 years, that's what I've been doing, is because we've had a number of crises around the world. Markets have been impacted, but people have come out the other side of it. So the best example I can give you was people invested in pre-COVID. They would have seen probably 25-30% drop in March 2020 on particular funds. Okay, some retirement, some people are looking to save for a wedding, some people are looking for saving for deposit for a house, and inundate with emails and calls about move the money to cash. And again, you have the conversation, you say to people, what was the original reason to buy a house in 6-7 years time? Has that changed? The time frame changed? No, we've actually got more money because we're not actually being asked to go into the office. So I said, well then you need to sort of remove yourself from the noise, forget about what's going on, and focus on your plan and your time. And ultimately, that's, I suppose, where I built the business from, Kieran, to be honest with you, because we have close to 70 million of assets under management, are helping people to create wealth for themselves. And ultimately, my job is just to manage that and manage people's expectations, because the fund will do the performance once people stay in the game, which means is remember why you invested when you met me in the first place versus worrying about what's going to happen in between.
So I guess to kind of simplify that might be, say when I was saving up to buy the house, so the difference between saving and investing. So when I was saving up, we were saving up our deposit. So I knew I needed to use that money, hopefully within the next year. So I wasn't looking, I wasn't in that mind frame of investments. Whereas investing your money will be more of a long-term plan in terms of 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And I think in Ireland, a lot of our wealth and a lot of, because we don't know a whole lot about, well, a lot of people do, but a lot of people don't know a whole lot about investing. Like a lot of our money is tied up in previous generations being tied up in the home they own. And that's where they got their money. But that's not used to you. That's only of use to your children when you die and the home gets left to them. But in terms of trying to understand where people need to be, the difference between saving and investing, I'm well aware that at the end of the month, for a lot of people, there's just nothing left. They don't have the money to, say, start an investment, or they're saving for a mortgage or whatever. Yeah. So what kind of financial situation or financial position do you think people should be in before they consider investing as well as saving?
Yeah, I'm well aware people will be sort of, especially with the cost of energy and the cost of things gone up over the last 18 months, that like it might be tight for certain people, and a certain part, of, like a large part of of people who probably watch this. But ultimately, what I'd say to you is that it's down to a mindset thing, okay? And I would say is people were used to saving for, say, their first house and maybe are on the ladder. Okay, they started with a goal. So you have to have some level of goal and you have to have discipline. So it's the same we spoke before about previously on gym, on a gym. If you want to go to a gym, you have to put the effort in, you have to have discipline, you have to turn up every day, you have to be consistent. So it's the same with investing. You have to take a step back and say, first of all, what do we need to have in place every month to make sure that the wheels stay on the road in relation to the financial plan for this family? So ultimately, making sure that you have enough to pay the bills, making sure that you have enough to pay the mortgage, making sure you have enough to live. Because at the end of the day, there's no point investing for the future if you can't enjoy the here and now, because you have to have and enjoy working, receiving an income, and obviously benefiting from that, okay? But then also just putting yourself in a situation saying, well, the future me wants to have the same level of opportunities in the future when I was working. So again, pension and retirement is the last stop. What I'd say to you is start with the here and now. Have you got enough to live on? If you do, then have you got an emergency fund or a fund? Back to what we said about saving, is having a portion of maybe 3 months of your income set aside for the things that come up that you're not necessarily planning for, like a broken washing machine, like something like the car needs to be NCT'd and something's happened to the car, it needs to be fixed, because that's a huge part of you getting to work. Or other things that can come along, like primary school, return to primary school, that costs maybe 1,500, 2 grand a year to have someone go to primary school, outside of activities like books and stuff like that, or trips and all that sort of stuff. So then after you've ticked a couple of those boxes, then you look at the opportunity of short-term savings, so or investing, which would be a minimum of 3 to 5 years. So that, again, there has to be a goal associated to that for you to benefit from it. So 5 years could be we're going to get a deposit for a house, or 3 years could be we're going to go to Disneyland, or it could be something that's in the family's financial plan. And the family come up with the objectives when we meet them. It's not me coming up with the objectives, because there has to be a reason to invest, because the goal will drive the discipline, which will lead to a positive outcome. But ultimately, some people come to us with no understanding of what where they're looking to be. And I said, well, I can't help you unless you understand where you are now, where you want to get to. And then I can help you in between about solving that based on the advice we give and the timeframes you give us. But ultimately, it's about understanding where you're at. And that starts with you sitting down, and people might say it's a mundane task, but ultimately understanding where the money goes, how it's deployed, and ultimately what's left after that to be able to solve future problems. Because if you take informed decisions and educate yourself now, the future you will thank you for it based on you making the decisions now. So for someone who starts a pension, for example, in their 30s, the future you at 60 and 65 will give you the opportunity to retire early, will give you the opportunity to maybe put the kids through college through a tax-free lump sum, loads of different things that happen. But that doesn't happen at 50 years of age because the time frame is too short. It happens the earlier you start or put a robust plan in place. But you have to be willing to sit down and put a bit of effort in. And I suppose a huge sort of issue sometimes we have as part of the onboarding process is people fly through the onboarding process and don't put enough thought into where they're at now and give us information. I always say to people is the plan we build is only going to be as good as the information you give us or the objectives, the targets you give us. Because if you don't put the time in, the outcome is not going to be a good one because you haven't put some serious thought in. So that's, I suppose, why we say we don't deal with thousands of clients. We try and help people who are at a stage of life where they need some sort of guidance and direction. They've come onto our page or seen us through yourself or seen me maybe in a company pension scheme and talking about the importance of looking at maybe educational funds for your kids, looking at maybe income protection, because if you don't have an income, you can't fund your retirement or save. So they come to us at loads of different ways, but ultimately no two plans we build are ever the same because no two scenarios are ever the same.
Yeah, I guess I'm probably guilty of that with the onboarding process and not putting enough time and thought into the application to give you the information as to say, right, this is what Ciarán and Mel need. So like for us, I'm working 3 jobs, Mel works as well, so it's 4 jobs between the two of us, and we're at a stage now where we're investing each month. We're just putting in the child benefits, so it's 300 quid a month for the 2 kids around that, and that's going into the Zurich educational plan thing. And I guess my motivation is from seeing what the last recession did to families, seeing it firsthand, and wanting to have some money there for when my kids are older, that they have something there that can help them, whether it's get a deposit on a house or whatever it may be. We're lucky in Ireland that, you know, we do have relatively free education. It's not like America where you're going to be forking out 200 grand for a degree.
Not yet.
No, I think we'll be all right in that aspect. But I think people just get really scared about investing, and yeah. they 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 feel like it's betting on the stock market. But as you said in an earlier point, it's not like putting all your eggs in one basket. I think we get a lot of ads and like Revolut and stuff. Like you can just go on to Revolut and you can start investing in these random stocks that you know nothing about.
Yeah.
So like lots of people are scared about that because personally, I think it shouldn't be that easy. Do you know what I mean? And as you said, you need to diversify. So say in a fund that it's in a load of different companies rather than one thing, say on the stock market, like something we'd see in say Wolf of Wall Street where everyone lost their money in. So what would you say to people like that who are afraid or they feel like investing is like a dirty thing where it's like the Wolf of Wall Street stuff?
Well, the Wolf of Wall Street is obviously a Hollywood blockbuster movie. The book is actually even better, but ultimately that is what probably perception of investing is. In reality, that's not what investing is. Investing is investing using, as you said, to use your example there, in a company like Zurich who specialize in doing children's educational plans, okay? And ultimately, you're investing in a fund that's well-diversified, has a risk spectrum of either between 2 and 7, okay? So what I mean was the 2 being probably heavily weighted towards government bonds and corporate bonds, whereas 5 or 6 would be heavily related to equities. But within that portfolio that you invest in or the fund fact sheet that usually we send out as part of the advice, there's probably a couple of thousand stocks invested across different demographics, different industries, different sectors, different currencies. So ultimately, people are getting a much broader context of how we're investing. The journey is a lot smoother than investing in direct stock. So I'm going to give you one example. A company that we would have a lot of clients come through because of I worked looking after the tech sector, would heavily have been buying stock of their own companies. So for years and years and years, and tech companies are heavily leveraged, and a lot of them don't make money for a long period of time. But ultimately, the staff would be highly recommended to buy stock instead of taking the bonds. Ultimately, one company that we dealt with flew through COVID and got really well, okay? And ultimately, a lot of people were buying their stock at a discounted price. What happened after COVID? The business model sort of fell apart and the stock fell by 80%. I had people ringing me, asking me what should we be doing? And I said, I told you from day one, you need to diversify away from your employer and into a well-diversified, because you're not going to see a 70 or 80% decrease in a Zurich fund, because one, it's actively managed by investment managers. Two, it's heavily diversified. Three, it's not concentrated in one particular area or one sector. And four is that you have access to someone like myself, who's like a coach, that says to you, this is where you should invest in based on the following things you've told us: your risk profile, your time horizon, your age, and your aspiration for return. Okay. When you go on to trading 212 or these platforms like Revolut, you're buying direct equities. Direct equities require you having an understanding of where they're invested, an understanding of the time frame you're going to invest in. And people think they can day trade their way. There's like, if you go on to any of these sites, there is sort of terms and conditions say that probably over 80% of people lose money because emotion kicks in. They see a fund going down, they sell to crystallize a loss, and they don't realize you have to do a tax return because you've lost money. So if you was buy and sell stocks, you are creating gains and losses. These need to be accounted for. These need to require a tax return. When you invest in a fund like a Standard Life, a Zurich, or an Irish Life fund, for example, is you're investing in, the best way to describe it is you're buying the haste. You're not looking for the needle, which is going to give you these 100x returns that, to be honest, it very rarely exist. You're looking for consistent returns over a long period of time. You might get this one needle in a haystack, but unfortunately, your human psyche kicks in when things fall, you sell, and unfortunately, that mightn't be the right time to sell. And ultimately, as a result, you've taken a loss, okay? So to use your, because obviously your page is usually geared towards housing. That's like buying a house for $500,000, right? And then after a year, like what's happened now, the market falls by 5% and saying, geez, the house is now worth 475. We need to sell because we're actually down. Okay. Again, it's back to, why did you buy the house? How long is the time frame? What would you do if you sell it? Where would you live? So it's just to use that analogy for the stocks is you have to understand before you make a decision to invest that you get some decent advice from somebody, get the time frame in your own mindset, agree that that's what the appropriate risk profile, agree on the appropriate fund. And then my job is to make sure that we constantly update you, understand once a year or every 6 months that you're on the right path based on what you're looking to achieve. So to finish off, the best example I can give is we've had a huge amount of people come through about educational funds. We were all taught that, you know, the credit union start up an account. or unpost startup an account and put the €140 in for your kid's education that you get from the state and leave it there for 18. Possibly the worst thing you could ever do, because €140 gets a zero return, okay? It's an 18-year period, is probably the second longest term outside of a pension. People get to having a fund of maybe 15, 20,000. The fund hasn't grown at all over those 18 years. And unfortunately, what happens? You have to either take a loan out to bridge the gap for a third level for the kids, or you have to obviously have the money yourself to cover the costs. So taking steps early and making an informed decision and investing in appropriately for the time frame that suits your objective will always have a positive return once you stay invested and you remember the reason why you went in from day. And that's why we don't take on thousands of clients. We take on people that are interested in their financial future and want to enhance what the future will look like. So my guarantee to everyone we meet as part of the team when we meet anyone is, when you meet us, I can assure you that you'll be in a far better position financially once you take the advice and stay invested or stay the course, what we discussed from day one before you implemented anything. But you have to understand that you would need to put some time, effort into, as you said, the onboarding process, because if you don't put time and effort into it, it's very hard for us to help.
Yeah. So in terms of the investing in individual stocks, like in the Wolf of Wall Street, sorry to keep using that analogy, and then say what you're talking about there is, there's way less risk when you're going via someone like you who is managing all of this, rather than going at myself on an app and probably becoming obsessed and constantly checking the app and ruining me day because it's gone down 10% today. Because you've got your money tied up in one single thing rather than a thousand different things. So the obvious example is not putting all your eggs in one basket. So I guess we're looking at trying to explain to people that it needs to be like, unless it's your day-to-day job, looking at those individual stocks, like it's I'd imagine extremely risky for people. So we wouldn't be.
I'm sure you've heard a story about you know, the years ago when the bet was placed to Warren Buffett with the top hedge fund managers in the world, and he bought an index and left it invested in an index, and he outperformed every active manager stroke hedge fund manager over that period of time. What did he do? He bought and held. The rest of them were trying to beat the market. So people in Wall Street or people who have Bloomberg terminals cannot outperform the market on a consistent basis. What chance have someone who is like myself and yourself with a Robinhood account, a Trading 212 account, or a Revolut account over that period of time? So I always say to people is, absolutely use them, right? Use them for maybe play money where you enjoy investing. But if effectively, if you don't know enough or haven't done enough due diligence on the companies you're investing in, it's effectively gambling. That's what it is. It's glorified gambling. So when you're buying something like a Vanguard ETF, which is an exchange traded fund, like the most common one known that we'd always have people ask questions on, is Vanguard ETF, which is this the Standard & Poor's 500, the top 500 companies in the US. You're still buying 500 companies, but it still goes up and down on a daily basis. Not to the degree of one stock, but you're heavily invested towards the tech sector. So there's different types of investment vehicles out there. But ultimately, my job, and the reason why when I said to you, I left the last company to set up here, is I've got access to the full gamut of the market. So if someone comes to us and says, I'm looking for a low risk investment, okay, well, Aviva might have that. If someone's looking for a Vanguard ETF, Standard Life have that. But again, it's me matching the risk profile, time horizon, an aspiration of that person or a family based on what they're telling me and their objective and their time horizon is. Unfortunately, with all these apps, there's no time horizon. People want quick wins and they don't get them. You saw probably in COVID, a lot of tech stocks went through the roof because everyone's staying at home, loads of money, and they're investing. But ultimately, you need to understand why you're investing and how you're investing, because there's different risks about investing. One is essentially the tax implication. Two is about the returns. And three is about the volatility. Can you handle that volatility that's going to be by buying individual stocks, or just buy the haystack and let it do its thing over a period of time? There's a reason why the S&P has done over 10% over the last 70 years. It's done some years plus 30, some years minus 20%, but it's consistently returned. The longer you stay in, the less chance there is of losing any.
So slow and steady wins the financial race. Yeah.
Unfortunately, there is no quick wins. People think there is. You read a lot of stuff and listen, American content is great for all that stuff, and people always throw that back in their face saying, oh, the management fee is much cheaper with this company. I said, yeah, but you're comparing the US market to the Irish market. It's completely different, you know, and it's important to take a step back and say, what's your plan forget about what Tony Robbins is saying, or forget about what Gary Vee is saying. You need to think about what you're saying and what your plan is and your time horizons, because that's just content that's blasted out with a view to educating people, and they do a lot of good things, but ultimately people can sort of extrapolate different things from what they're saying and try to retrofit it to their own situation. And I said to you, I'll always be in a job, because ultimately people's scenarios are always different based on who we meet. You've got two people, like two teachers, for example. One has different aspiration with young kids and a family. Someone's just starting off as a substitute teacher and looking to get a position. They're totally different needs and totally different goals. Yeah. But again, they might consume the same content.
So if I'm at a point, right, say I'm listening to this and after I pay my mortgage or my rent, I have a couple of hundred quid left at the end of the month, or maybe I just inherited 10, 15 grand or whatever. If I have some extra money and I'm lucky enough to have some extra money, should I invest this or should I use it to pay off some debt, like say a mortgage or a car loan?
Great question. And I say to you, there's no right answer for that until you know enough about the person's situation. So again, I'd say to you is, if you've got high yielding debt or high expensive debt, an example you used there was a car loan. So car loan probably north of 9%, or you have a credit card debt, more importantly, which is plus 20%.
Yeah.
I would always say to people is, and this is why we do discovery calls and onboarding calls, and people sometimes think I'm mad, saying, I came to you, but you're telling me not to use your services and pay off debt. I'm saying, yeah, but it's remiss of me to tell you to, or advise you to invest in something where I'm going to say, try and target a return over a period of time, maybe 6% a year, net or gross, and you're paying 20% on a credit card and just basically turning it over every month. That is absolutely mad, financial madness. So you need to take a stock first and have good habits, back to said as well, and clearing off those high yielding debts. I wouldn't be clearing off mortgage debt over a period of time. I'd be overpaying it versus chunks off it. And the reason I do that is because your mortgage on a primary residence is not an asset, because it's not yielding an income. You have to sell that asset to realize the gain. Okay. So ultimately you've got 10 grand that's liquid and you're in your situation there and paid off the 10 grand. Oh yes, you save maybe a year or 2 years in your mortgage, but you've lost access to the 10,000 euro. So again, that might be all the 10,000 euro you have, and you don't have anything. So it takes time to build that back up. So it's about having a blended or a hybrid approach, paying down debt, but it always starts with the snowball effect, which would be start with the highest and most expensive debt and work it down and then look at invest. Okay. And people say to me, well, I just want to invest. I have a credit card. It's 4 grand or 3 grand. And we just pay the minimum. I'm saying, what you need to do is you need to pay that off. And more importantly, after that, is cut up that credit card and start budgeting properly so you can plan properly and have a good financial future. Because if you don't change your habits, you're going to end up in a situation where you're 50, 55 and 60. And the only person that can help you is yourself.
I think a lot of the content, as you said, we do see in America that kind of comes on the Instagram, and depending on what your algorithm is, they're so big on credit cards over there, because they get different things. They get air miles, they get all those other bits. Like there's so many different credit card companies over there. I think it's a different market over here in Ireland. We don't have those type of credit cards. So say somebody has, say, a mortgage, and then they have a car loan, and maybe they have a credit union or a credit card, and you guess you need to look at what the interest rate is then. Is that what you're saying? So if they have 10 grand, paying it off their mortgage, if their interest rate is low on the mortgage, it might not be the best use of it. Whereas if they have a 4 grand credit card loan and that's 20%, well, if they put that 10% into a fund and investing, and that's yielding 7% a year, but it's costing them, but the other debt they have, that 4 grand they have, is costing them 20%. There's a mad discrepancy there of say 13%. So that the money they're making on the investment isn't enough to counterbalance what they're spending on the credit card. Is that right?
Exactly. So ultimately, I'd say to them is, boy, you deploy the extra cash you have to paying down that debt quicker. So if it's, again, back to your point of 7-8% or 10%, paying that off, right? And that repayment then disappears. Say, it could take 2 years, it could take 3 years to pay it off, right? But you'll be in a far better position financially, because then you won't have any debt. You'll have more to play with, because you won't have any servicing on an ongoing basis. Then you can start deploying that capital towards something that's going to grow in value, that's actually going to enhance your financial wealth, versus something that's constantly on a drag on your income, a drag on your outcomes, and ultimately is going to put you in the same position every month, and you're never going to see light at the end of the tunnel. And these sort of chevrons or checkpoints in life are going to come up, where you're going to have money for kids' education, buying a house, doing renovations, changing the car. They're going to have to be all serviced with debt then, which is going to put you into a bigger problem, because you're going to have less income then to deploy to holidays and enjoying life, and you're going to feel yourself in this sort of chamber of constantly servicing debt. So you have to start with paying down the most expensive debt. Okay. A mortgage is the longest loan you'll ever have and probably the most interest you'll ever pay over your life. But ultimately, it's there at a probably very, very low rate compared to credit cards. Like the most expensive mortgage rate at the moment is probably 6%. In the States, it's nearly 9-10%. So it's a debt and it's expensive, but more importantly, it's needed because obviously it gives you the value to having a home and paying down debt versus renting. And it's going to give you an asset in the future. Maybe you transfer to your kids or you downsize and get and have released the capital. But ultimately, it's a good debt because it's low interest compared to where other countries. More importantly, is it's your house and your prime residence. You're not gambling on it. It's basically you are servicing it with the view to clearing off the loan. But I would definitely say to people, and I've said to like some people have come from referrals come from your page saying I'm looking to start off doing 300-400 a month, and then I said to you our onboarding process is you need to tell me what you're doing. The amount of people here that can't even tell us what the interest rate is, I said, well, I can't advise you if you can't tell me what your car loan rate is, or you can't tell me what your interest rate is on your credit card, because ultimately I'm doing you a disservice. And the best advice can't be given because you haven't given me the full picture.
Yeah. So, well, let's say I don't have a credit card, but yeah. I do have 10 grand, but I don't have a credit card. I have a small car loan that's 10 grand, say, and it's 5%. Should I use that 10 grand to pay off the car loan straight away on a depreciating asset, or should I put that 10 grand into an investment?
I would say to you is for a car loan, I would use maybe a portion of it to pay it down. So to reduce it, because car loans are usually between 3 and 5 years. So ultimately pay that down, because that car loan could be 300-400 quid a month. Okay. So if you pay, say, for example, in your scenario, 5 grand off, and it brings the car loan down to maybe 5 or 10 grand, it means that and maintain the repayment of the car loan means the car loan is cleared quicker. And again, back to what I said earlier on, is you deploy that 300 or 500 that you're paying in the car loan to the savings, along with the other 5 grand you had already available to you. So you can either put that in as a lump sum or to the investment plan, or you can auto invest it over a period of time, which means is split it out over 12 months and invest it regularly, so you still have access to some of it. But that would be after you have an emergency fund of a couple of grand or 3 months of emergency funds that should never be invested, because you need to have access to cash in the event of, as I said, the NCT problems or heating goes or heat pump goes. You shouldn't be taking money from an investment plan. You should have that readily available to you, whether it's a couple of thousand, but it all again depends on people's outgoings and incomes.
Okay. Super. Right. So we've spoken a lot about investments there. Next thing that I get a lot of questions about is pensions. So I've done a 90-second explainer on my page about pensions that I think is quite good, that kind of breaks them down really simple as to what it is, what a pension is. But I know people listening to this will obviously have heard of pensions, but maybe they're not quite sure what they are. So can you do your best in a 90-second explanation of what a pension is and why it's important for planning for retirement?
Yeah, geez, a lot of elevator pitches in this podcast. So ultimately, the pensions will be the bread and butter of what I did in Irish life for a long period of time, right? But pensions, in a nutshell, is a savings account with tax relief over a long period of time that's going to give you an income at retirement. Okay, so you get tax relief on the way in, you get tax free growth the whole way through, and you get a tax free lump sum at the end, and the balance will give you an income to supplement what you were, or a percentage of what you were earning through your working life. Okay. So the best way to understand that is when you get to retirement age at 66 years of age, you will get 14,000 from the state. The great thing is, if you think 14,000 is going to give you enough at retirement, you don't need to have a pension. So what a pension does, again, all it is a savings plan for retirement. So it's for another goal, which is a long way in the distance. Okay. But ultimately it's going to give you a buffer on top of the state. Okay. So what I always use, and I'm going to show my age here, right, is there used to be a Mars ad that was out years ago, right? And the Mars ad was, a Mars a day helps you work, rest, and play. Right? So I use that analogy for retirements, okay? So in your working life, you usually work 8 hours a day, okay? In your working life, play is usually another probably 8 hours, and then you usually sleep 8 hours, okay? When you come to retirement, those 8 hours you're working, you cancel them out, right? You cross them off. But those 8 hours fall into the play or your time. The time you have back. So you have 16 hours, or double the time you had to enjoy life versus when you were working. Okay. That usually requires income, because you're either at home, you travel more, you go on holidays more, you spend time with the grandkids, or you may want to do things in life that you couldn't do when you're working as charity work or whatever it's going to be. But ultimately, you need to have enough capital or enough cash or enough savings or enough pension in place to be able to supplement those 8 hours that you weren't. So ultimately, what I say to people is a pension is going to give you, that's only one facet of retirement, by the way, because people will have inheritance, people will have saved, people might have a second property, people might have won the lotto. Loads of different things that feed into a retirement plan. But pension or funding for retirement through a pension contract is the most tax advantageous one to do. And also is it's going to give you the best return because it's the best investment vehicle because you get tax-free growth, you get tax relief up to 40% every month based on what you're funding. And also you get a tax-free lump sum of up to 25% of the total fund. So in essence, in a nutshell, to finish it off is it's a savings plan for retirement that's going to give you a quality of life based on the size of the fund and when you started on top of the state pension, 14,000.
So when it comes to a pension, do I get to choose which pension plan I invest in?
Unfortunately not, right? Because it all depends, again, back to the personal circumstances. So if you've got a teacher, for example, you're all like yourself, you're automatically enrolled into that particular type of pension scheme. If you're a nurse, you're automatically inflicted that particular type of pension scheme. If you're a doctor in the HSE, that's just the public service. Yeah. On the private side of things, okay, that you have different types of pensions. The industry is notorious for making it complex for people to understand them, right? But ultimately, if you're an employer, are in employment and you have a company sponsored pension plan, which some people will have, some people won't have. But ultimately what that is what the employer decides that they're going to, as part of your package, are going to put in a percentage of salary for you on your behalf that costs you nothing. So for example, if you put in 5% of your salary, you get tax relief on your portion, the company will match up to 5%. So that's a company pension, which would be the majority of people. Then you have self-employed people that do tax returns this time of the year. And what they'll do is come to the end of the year and say, oh, I've got a tax bill. My accountant's asked me to offset that into what's called a personal pension or a PRSA, which is a personal retirement savings account. So there are two types of different where a self-employed person is. Then you have people who have no pension in place, okay? And what the government are trying to do in the next, probably by 2025, is bring in what's called auto-enrollment. So what that is where people, if you've worked in the UK or you've worked or you've traveled in Australia, you will know that you're automatically enrolled into a government-sponsored pension scheme where the employer has to put in a percentage of salary and you put in. There's an opt-out basis. The details haven't been really released yet, but ultimately it's trying to bring in huge portion because it's about 40% of the population who've no pension. It's making sure that everyone is looked after and everyone has some level of comfort at retirement outside of the state pension. So there is loads of different pension schemes in place, but it's all related to your employment, your employer, and whether you're public service or private sector. Because some employers will implement it. It's not a government law to implement a company pension at this point in time. Some people will say, no, I pay enough. It's up to you to decide to do it yourself. And they'll service it through payroll, but don't put an employer contribution. But again, that's why people come to us and say, well, I have a company, I've got 3 staff. I'm looking for the best opportunity, or I'm a husband and wife, company directors. I'm looking for advice. The advice will be related on their circumstances or their situation. And then we can help them and say, this is the right pension structure for you based on your current circumstances. But that might change because you might move company and you might move to a different person or a different company and they might have a company pension. So you might have to stop that and move it. So it's a journey, but it's really difficult for people to understand that. But that's why we're supposed to always be in existence, is helping people, because people don't stay in jobs for 40 years anymore. And unfortunately, as a result, is they move, circumstances change, and then they get sort of caught up and blown. Do I keep this one? Do I move it? What do I do with it? So to wrap up on what the scenario is, there's loads of different pensions, there's loads of different opportunities, but ultimately it's about understanding what your situation is and what's relevant to you.
Okay, so use me as an example, right? I have my INTO, I'm primary school, so we have the INTO through them, a primary school pension, which is being changed. I'm one of the newly qualified 10 years ago, but we're on a different pension to say my colleagues that were working before me. They're on a much better pension than I am. So they get paid, their pension will be based on their final salary, which will be the highest, whereas mine will be based on an average. So I'm aware now that when I get to retirement age, my pension is not going to be very good compared to previous teachers or retired teachers now, you know, who bought a house for a lot less and also get a much bigger pension. Whereas my generation, we're buying houses for a lot more of teachers and our pensions are going to be a lot less. So we're being kind of smashed there. So I'm aware of that. So what I've done is I am doing additional voluntary contributions through yourself. So I know there's a lot of people in the same situation as me, and where money is tight, but I know that I need to put the money in now so that when I get to 55, 60, 65, I'm not struggling. So how can people maybe balance that investing and contributing to their pension? Have you any kind of advice for that, especially if they're on a budget, like, or any simple kind of strategies or tips you recommend that, like myself, I'm trying to put little bits into investing. I'm doing my ABCs. I'm doing the children's education plan. And then I'm also paying into my pension through automatically anyway, through work.
Yes. So again, it's back to starting off with the why you're investing and time frames. So again, starting off with the emergency fund, the medium term, which is the kids' education, and then ABCs is something that people do. Now, in your scenario, to the people, is sometimes it's really difficult to get statements or updated values on where you're at in relation to years accrued, what your salary is, what your pension is going to look like. Really difficult in the public service to do that because they're inundated with people coming to retirement. So it's either, I'd say to people, you need to look at the whole buying back years, okay, overdoing ABCs first and seeing what that's going to cost and how that works and if it applies to you. But ABCs are again to create an additional tax-free lump sum or a buffer on top of what your pension is going to give you, because as you rightly said there, a lot of people might be aware is that it's career average earnings for a lot of people that have joined certain parts of the public service versus final salary, which means is that it's not going to be based on final salary, because as you get older and more experienced, usually your salary or accrue or your scale goes up. So it's basically you're starting from a low base, but like it's a much smoother journey up, where final salary is what you land there. You get 2/3 of your final salary after 40 years service, and you get a big one and a half times your final salary is a tax-free lump sum. So that's not happening for anyone that started in the last 15, 20 years in the public service. So it's about, as you rightly said, putting in a foundation like an ABC, starting off at small and building up at your salary does it, but more importantly, making sure you do that after you've exhausted the whole buying back service, is it a viable option? And then going back further to say, have you got the educational fund in place and your sort of plan or foundation in place first before you start looking 30 years ahead?
Yeah. So for AVCs, I try to do them every year. And just for people, this, if they don't really know what they are, I'll try and explain it and then maybe you'll correct me. So let's say it's tax-free. So I have €1,000 and I want to put that into an AVC, an additional voluntary contribution. That €1,000 goes into my, say, pension pot, but I get, because I'm on the higher tax rate, I get 40% of that back in tax relief. So I get €400 back in tax relief. So really it's cost me €600, but €1,000 has gone into my pension pot. Is that correct?
Yes. So the way you do it, you're doing it on a basis where you're funding for last year. Okay. So some people will fund regularly and they get their tax bands widened because they can earn more. So ultimately what you're doing is you're claiming back tax that you've already paid.
Yeah.
Okay. And getting it back from the revenue and put into your future, which is the ABC. So ultimately, there's two tax bands in Ireland. There's a 20% and 40%. Because if you're on the 40% tax band, you get the 40% relief. It's ultimately you're getting a rebate of tax. So there is no investment vehicle in the world is where you're going to get 40% return, which is the tax relief, back before you even start investing. So again, there's two ways to do it. There's obviously a lump sum basis at the end of the year. So doing it before the 31st of October, so you can get a rebate back for last year, or you can fund regularly per month and get the tax relief, or you claim the tax relief back on MyPAYE. So in essence, it's just another type of pension, additional voluntary contribution, but it's a savings plan with tax relief for retirement.
It's really, I think when you put it like that, they're a real no-brainer, I think, to AVCs if people have the money to do it, because if that the tax relief alone is fantastic. So if, say, someone did have, say, £200 a month, so say £2,500 a year that they have to play with, should they put that into an AVC? Should they put that into investing?
I would say to you, start off with investing based on, again, it's getting to know what the person, where they're at in life and what their reason for investing is. But if they've got the box ticked in relation to the emergency fund and some objective, whether it's buying a house or without, like if you're looking to buy a house, I would be saying to you, defer doing ABCs and all that sort of stuff. You need to plow your energy and all your sort of goals into one particular objective. And usually it's buying a house and getting on the ladder and sort of giving you some level of financial security. Because the last thing I want to be doing is advising them to do an ABC and renting in retirement and that being used to pay rent because ultimately they didn't have enough cash available to get a deposit together on top of the government support schemes to be able to get on the ladder. Ultimately, you need to take stock of where they're at. Are they planning to buy? Some people say, no, I'm not planning to buy at all. I'm going to inherit my parents' house. Fine. Well, then look looking at an ABC. That's part of their financial plan. But ultimately, don't be doing ABCs unless you have the other boxes ticked about short, medium, and long term. And I keep going back to that. It sounds very basic, but ultimately, it's so, so important. The decisions you make are informed and are based on where you want to be in the future. And ultimately, if you put money into an ABC, just the pitfall is you can't access that ABC until you either leave employment in that sector or you retire. So there is rules around being able to access it. So it's just really important to say is do it for the right reasons, but do it on an informed basis.
Okay, brilliant. Isn't it really sad that a lot of us have to rely on someone dying in order to have financial security as we get older? But I guess
unfortunately, a lot of people, like a lot of their assets are tied in property because we have this fascination towards property in Ireland. And a lot of like the assets have, as we know, have outstripped the cost of housing, has outstripped the change in our income. So as a result is people come to us and saying, I said, what's your financial plan? Well, I'm hoping my parents will obviously, as part of their plan, will leave us the house. I'm just going, but you can't really rely on, there's no time frame there. You can't be relying on them to prop your financial plan up. You need to take stock of where you're at and have some level of control. And you're an adult now, you know what I mean? Taking good decisions. And unfortunately, people don't have plans. I have one person in the last month telling me they planned with a lotto. Like it's like things like, and that's a serious, on a serious note. I'm just saying to you, like, you need to understand this, no matter how much income you earn, you have to make sure you understand you know where it goes. Because if you don't know where it goes, it's not going to get any better. No one's going to come and help you unless you can help yourself.
Well, I'm hopeful that this conversation has helped people maybe motivate them in terms of just get themselves organized, get themselves into a position where they know their interest rates they're paying, they know what their debt is, and can maybe figure out a plan with you maybe to say, okay, well, this is what I need to do to have a bit more financial security as I get older. So say someone is listening to this now and they're thinking, right, I need to get sorted. I need to start investing or I need to sort my pension. What's the first thing they should do?
So the first thing they should do is to sit down and take stock of where everything goes from, okay? The second thing is if they have any existing plans in place, like for example, is you're saving into the credit union or you're saving into a post, is get the statements and see what you're actually getting as a return or where it is, how long it's in for, when the maturity it is. The third thing is then on a pension side, if you've worked on previous employments, making sure you don't just have that buried in a drawer somewhere and you don't know where it is, you don't know where it's invested, because all these things feed into the plan. And as I said to you, people sometimes get frustrated. I said to people is I give my time 30 minutes to a discovery call, and I say to people at the end of it is, I'm not willing to put the effort in. So we send you a link after this, an onboarding to us. You take your time filling in. Some people take weeks, take months. Get all the information for us, because I can't get that for you and I can't help you until we have a full picture or the full jigs. And then once you've taken the time and committed to us that you're serious about your plan, we will build a plan. It'll take a couple of hours. People say, how much does it cost? I said, I actually don't believe in charging you until we show we can bring you some value. And I said, after we bring you the value, we lead the solutions. The solutions will lead to a product, and we'll either get paid from the provider, or we can charge you based on how much work's involved in the plan. But like other people leave with charging people to engage with the services and then charge them as well and get paid by the insurance company. For me, I think it's important to give access to someone like myself and someone like our team to be able to help people. And sometimes, Kieran, to be honest, we say to people, you're probably 6 months away from actually us being able to help you. You need to get your house in order first before, and then come back to us. So ultimately, I said, we have 350 clients. We don't want to be everyone's solution. Some people have thousands and 7,000, 8,000 clients. For me, it's about getting the right clients that are in the right mindset that I can help, that'll make informed decisions and be in a far better position financially when they meet us, because they've taken the steps based on educating themselves and being in a good position. So that leads with a discovery call from us. And to be honest with you, we have had hundreds of people come through over the last couple of months. And again, it's a lot of it's educating or coaching people about tips about what you need to do based on what you told me for 30 minutes. And then I think it's too early for us to try and help you, because you haven't even got your house in order. And it'd be remiss of me to start saying to you, let's set up an ABC when you're paying 20% credit card. You know, or there's people who don't have credit card debt, but are ultimately living off overdrafts. Like we can't help people like that until they have the right mindset to want to have a better financial future.
So if I'm listening to this, I need to know what my outgoings are. So I need to sit down and take a bit of time, be an adult, take a bit of time and write down, okay, this is what's going out. I have this much on a car loan. This is what my interest rate is on my mortgage, and know where all my money is going, which is easier to do nowadays than it has ever been before, because
analytics and bank access to bank statements, Revolut, all that sort of stuff, easier.
It's all on apps and all that. Like it's you can download things straight away. So it's an easier thing to do now to do this kind of financial health check and like an audit and see where all your money is going. So if I want to talk to you, I need to kind of make sure I've done that. So I'm in the right mindset and I'm organized so that when I do a discovery call or when we're having a chat that I know this is what I'm paying out and I'm a bit more serious about it so that I'm not wasting your time and my own time. And then I also need to make sure that I know what my long-term goal is, because I know myself, for me, it's my kids, and to make sure that they're okay, which is a broad goal, but you know, as much money as possible I can give them a head start. So just to make sure that people understand, if they're listening to this and they're right, okay, I'm motivated now to sort this out, you have to do the work a little bit first, otherwise you can't help them.
Yeah, exactly. So just think of your own scenario. So for example, you came to us, you had a couple of aspirations or a couple of objectives. You were getting a house, you got the house. Then you have, obviously, you have changed the circumstances because you've got a new son. So the plan at the start is probably the hardest part because you can do a bit of work. But the plan evolves, like a Google Maps. There's different journeys, there's different paths. There will be some cul-de-sacs you come through. There's some headwinds that will happen, some tailwinds that will happen. But ultimately, our job is to make sure you stay on the right path to get to the goals that you've given us from day one. And objectives will change based on things that happen through the course of your life. So a financial plan is a journey, it's not a transaction. And unfortunately in this industry, there's certain places you go, and I'm going to just focus on a bank for a second. You go into a bank, they have to make sure you leave with some sort of product, because they know it's very hard to get you in, and they want you to sell you something to get you out. For us, it's about understanding where you're at, make an informed decision, putting a plan in place, and as a result of the plan, it'll lead to a better or an enhanced financial future for the family. So that might be, the first call might be pay off debt, come back to us in 6 months or 2 years. It might be get access to your pension fund that you've left 3 years ago. You need to get a statement. I can't get the statement for you because they won't talk to me. It might be get your statement from your car loan. You've got 30 grand in the bank and you're telling me you have a car loan of 15 grand. Why wouldn't you consider looking at that? How much interest that's going to save you? Show me what interest you're paying. I'll tell you how much we'll save you by paying off that and deploying that now towards a savings plan. So again, it's back to making good decisions, but it can only be done when you know where you're at and how you are deploying your income every month after tax to make sure it's going to the right place.
So there's no one size fits all kind of solution.
Absolutely not.
People basically just need to get organized, and then you can help them figure out what their plan is.
I'd encourage people to just on our site on fms.ie is we have a built-in infograph, and the infograph is in a shape of a house, because there's no point in me talking about strategies and investments at the top of the house when you haven't got the purpose, the objective, and time frames, which is the bottom or the foundation. You need to get, as the famous phrase, you get your house in order, get a good foundation, and build on that, and then sustain it.
Okay, you're a legend. Thanks for that, Niall. I really appreciate it.
No worries at all. Thanks, Kieran. Thanks for having me.
Now, a huge thank you to Niall for shedding light on the often very dirty and murky waters of personal finance. He's really straightforward with his advice, and he's really honest. So if he's not going to be of any use to you, if you haven't got your kind of finances in order, he'll tell you that. He's not just going to try and tell you something for the sake of it. So I'm hopeful that this podcast has kind of provided you with the tools to start maneuvering and your finances and really get a solid hold on them and figure out where your financial situation is, and maybe give you a little bit of motivation to try and organize yourself so that future you will thank you for that. So just before I wrap up, a little gentle reminder to check out the Instagram page, check out fpms.ie. That's Niall's website that has a load of information on there on all sorts of finances, pensions, AVCs, investments, all that kind of stuff. And if you do want to get in touch with Niall, you can catch him. I'll put it in the show notes, in the description. I'll put a link to his page, his Instagram. And if his insights resonated with you, please do consider reaching out to him for a personalized financial roadmap. But do remember that you need to have your homework done beforehand so that you're not wasting your own time and his. So, Guramagwif Galair, Agus, I will chat to you at the next podcast.